Good morning, afternoon, or evening, Miami University. My name is Paige Hake. Hopefully by now you're not bored of my voice because it's business as usual with me as your host for today's awesome episode of Career Chat. Today we'll be hearing from Dr. Brian Aschenbaum, an associate professor here at Miami University, to get his take on how he helps guide students into their careers in Miami's prestigious Farmer School of Business. Brian attended Arizona State University and received his PhD in Business Administration in 2006. His primary research interests are supply chain integration and boundary behavior, and the human factor in supply chain and operations management. He has won both undergraduate and graduate teaching awards in the Farmer School of Business. Prior to his academic career, he held various positions with Procter & Gamble, Honeywell, NIBCO, and Perrier. He also spent 6 years in the U.S. Navy's Nuclear Propulsion Program. Dr. Aschenbaum will explain his current role at Miami.
Although my main job at Miami here is as an associate professor on the faculty of the Farmer School of Business Management Department, and specifically in the supply chain and operations management area, as part of my service commitment, I am the chair of the Farmer School of Business Careers Committee. So that committee is composed of a representative of each of the 6 main faculty departments, one faculty member from each serving on the committee. In addition, a number of people who work for the Farmer School of Business in career and recruiter or student-facing roles in that regard are also on the committee. We have a couple of directors of external engagement and also internal student professionalization that serve on it, and some other people that also go out and work in bringing more recruiters to campus.
Okay, so you've pretty much covered the first question I was going to ask you, but is there anything else you'd like to add in regards to the Farmer Career Committee?
The only thing I might say, and I think this might come a little bit into some of the further questions you've got, is that a committee like that is fairly important inside of probably any academic unit, in my opinion, but especially a business school, because the faculty tend to be the ones that are closest to the students. And so having a committee that's faculty-led with a career mission is a good thing to have. Obviously, every university has a career services office, and there's people who work for the university in administrative capacities to help with careers and recruiting. But it's pretty important to have a group that also tries to tap the potential out there in the faculty that are closely connected to the students. That's largely what this committee tries to do.
That was a good description of the committee, but can you explain the strategy its members employ to integrate the career component to students?
So first of all, broader level, divisional level strategy is to have this committee that tries to tie together all the different folks who would work for the business school in some sort of career engagement aspect and have them work together and integrate their findings and generate some synergy. Again, in particular, having the faculty that are very close to the students and also have a passion for helping connect those students to their potential future careers. This committee has a focus in doing that, helping find those faculty, educating them a little bit, and helping them in reaching out to the students and connecting them. I would say that beyond simply the committee itself, and Miami in particular has been moving towards this, we try our best in every way possible, if you will, to have the real world touch our students in the course of their studies. So as students, they know how to be students, so to speak. They know that they need to take classes, do projects and assignments, take exams. At some point, doing enough of those gets you that degree in hand and walking across the stage. But however, we try to do, and this is what helps professionalize them, is to generate all their, I guess, if you will, career awareness and career search help. So in that regard, bringing in outside managers to speak to our classes, bringing in outside managers to judge student case competitions, actually have some input under the grade the students might get for performing a particular group assignment or presentation. And several classes do experiential learning, one of mine included, where a big chunk of the course grade is actually contingent on them successfully performing a client-focused project. As an example, in my course in global strategic sourcing, 40% of the course grade involves a project where my students in teams of 4 or 5 have to go out and do some actual supply chain work for a client in the real world. It's nothing that's watered down, if you will, or artificially created just for students to cut their teeth on. This is a real company with a real problem in the supply chain area. The data that the students are analyzing are real. The outside research they do is real. They make a presentation at the end of it and make suggestions for what their clients should do to address the particular issue they've got. I think that's huge for helping them understand a little bit what the world after college is going to be like and the kinds of problems and issues they're going to be called upon to solve as employers and managers in their future company.
So we're really seeing this reoccurring theme of a perceived duality between the real world and college, and incorporating the business world is proving to be beneficial. Could you elaborate on the advantage of this approach?
Sure. I think the advantage of this approach is that the students, in a parallel sense, they're doing their content delivery through the coursework like traditional students do, and then in a somewhat non-traditional way, they're reaching out and touching the real world and encountering how, you know, just how much messier, if you will, and more complicated and ambiguous it is compared to some of the more straightforward theories they might learn in the class. So the advantage is that they're getting to learn and cut their teeth in what the real world is going to offer them and the kind of problems that they will face. But at the same time, to be honest, the stakes are a little bit lower for them. You know, you go into the real world and you don't do very well, well, that's your job on the line, your raise, your promotion, whatever. Here, don't get me wrong, there are consequences of not doing a good job. It's a grade in a course, which I realize at this time in their life, they think is maybe more significant than it'll later turn out to be. But at least those consequences are far lower. Worst case scenario, they don't perform very well on a project, or they, you know, get a somewhat lower grade than they might have otherwise gotten. But on the other hand, they gain all this valuable experience so that maybe next time around they face this kind of a problem, the stakes are a lot higher. It's now maybe their job on the line, or at least a promotion or a decent raise. They've learned from what they did in the past when the stakes were lower, and they apply that and they perform better. So I think that's a huge advantage to over a general experiential learning type approach where you do as much as you can to connect them to the world they're going to enter shortly.
Do you see any potential disadvantages?
Honestly, I really don't. Really, as an academic, the disadvantage might be that these projects tend to take a little bit of a life of their own. They are very labor intensive, and sometimes it's, you know, one, it's hard to realize how labor intensive they might be. So if the professor who teaches the course isn't somewhat careful in setting the parameters of the projects or the boundaries of the projects, you either have the students realizing, oh my gosh, this is way more work than maybe is fair given the chunk of the only one grade, you know, the percentage of a single course grade. And likewise, if you don't manage the expectations of the client successfully, if they think that they're getting 40 billable client hour equivalent, you know, a week's of work, and really they're not getting that much, or if they, for some reason, thought the students would be far more polished as, you know, a professional consultant would be, and you didn't successfully manage the expectation that you're getting something of value, but here's the realistic time commitment, and here's the realistic experience level of the consultant slash students that are going to be working for you for a semester, then things can go poorly. That's just something I think by trial and error, a lot of that's on the professor of the course to successfully understand and communicate to both parties. But I think that disadvantage is very small. You notice I'm couching that in hypotheticals. If you're not on top of how you do this and not careful in how you roll it out, one or both parties might feel like what they thought was going to happen wasn't met. Overwhelmingly, I have to tell you that there's very little disadvantage in doing this kind of experiential, touch the real world stuff.
Right. And I'm sure if it's properly managed, that wouldn't happen.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, very rarely, right? It's a learning process like anything else. We as faculty members are also constantly learning and tweaking our knowledge and hopefully improving what we deliver for the students.
Could you illustrate these career connection strategies by giving specific examples of how you've directly connected students to employers?
Sure. So in the original question you asked about my role in the careers committee, and that's composed of faculty who have a passion for that kind of connection and making it happen. So any number of times, because of our contacts out in the professional world, we get a phone call, we get an email, you know, hey, I've got a position I've got to fill. Do you have anybody? And we can pass that right on to our students directly. I mean, that just happens constantly by virtue of the fact that, let's be honest, holes in the professional organization open up at different times than the recruiting cycle coming out of college does. Have a traditional, you'll start your senior year and start looking for a job. You won't show up to your company till June or so, perhaps, to start working for them. Well, obviously, companies' needs for talent don't really neatly fall along that time continuum. So it consistently, companies are coming in, they need somebody a little sooner, or at least they don't know how to go about the more formalized channels of recruitment and want to know how to connect to students. That happens a lot. And I would say through the projects that I have my students do, a number of them have gotten jobs. One young lady got a job with, for example, Cintas Corporation because she stood out so much as the leader of the project team that we did for them a semester ago. So she graduated last year. It would have been fall of 2011. She had my class. She was such a standout in leading that project team that upon her graduation that following spring of 2012, she was offered a job with them in their rotational management program.
That's really awesome.
Brutally honest, it's one of the more gratifying aspects of this job. One of the more intrinsic rewards, I guess, is seeing that connection and sometimes feeling like you help make that connection and help start the young professional, gave them a little help as they started out in life. It's kind of a good feeling.
With technology changing so rapidly, how do you see it developing in the future, and how do you think it will affect students and employers alike?
So here's the, I try to predict the future, and I'll be spectacularly wrong anyway. Just several years ago, probably few people would have predicted the ubiquitous spread of social media, of the way that our just basic cell phones have even evolved. Well, people wouldn't have predicted cell phones, for one thing, but then even afterwards, they wouldn't have seen how they would have almost seamlessly merged as the personal computer and communication device on our hip, and not just the phone that used to sit on the wall in your kitchen, now on your hip. So I don't know in the future, particularly since you're asking me about communication, what new thing is going to come. But necessarily, there'll be something that'll make it even faster and quicker. I don't know if I see enormous changes in that. What I would say is businesses are going to have to adopt to not just the ubiquity of these communication methods, but their informality. Most of these new communication technologies, and I suspect future ones as well, are going to be this ever-increasing cycle of quick, fast, and informal. Younger folks will always pick up on those technologies, as a general rule, faster than folks in older generations. Well, but folks in older generations will, also as a general rule, be those younger people's bosses and managers in their professional career. So it'll create a little bit of a challenge in how that's used with perhaps, and I'm stereotyping a little, but one's boss, you know, your 21, 22-year-old professional, your boss is maybe just less conversant and maybe less comfortable with whatever the quick, fast, and informal communication technologies of the day are. And so that just has potential to create a little bit of miscommunication in a variety of ways. Everyone knows how emails can be misread, and someone can read a tone or an attitude into an email that wasn't at all intended, but you're just reading words on a computer screen. Similarly, with a quick and rapid text message or various social media ways to interact, you probably also have that danger a little bit. So I don't know what's going to change and be better. I think that it's going to have to be managed effectively so that it's a useful tool that adds value and doesn't cause some of those intangible or softer barriers and problems to working together well in a multi-generational corporate environment.
Yeah. Do you think there's a way to prepare students for that?
A little bit. I try to tell them, you know, you're used to these methodologies. You are very used to quick and rapid text messages with minimal vowels and grammar and punctuation attempts, right? You know, with your friends. And that's the way you communicate socially. And you're going to have bosses that are just going to seem a little bit more behind to you. And they're going to read into even an email for that matter, but a text or whatever, or a Facebook message or a LinkedIn type message, whatever you will, they'll read into quick and fast and missing a lot of vowels as, why doesn't this person take the time to spell correctly? Or don't they realize those two words sound alike, but they're not the same word, or something a little bit particular. And I suspect to the younger professional, that'll seem almost nitpicky, an old-fashioned way to think. And the older professional will have the mindset of, doesn't this person realize they're now in a professional job? They're not just texting their bar buddies. You know, they're sending me something about the client meeting we have tomorrow or our supplier conference next week. And so the best you can do is kind of try to advise them to exercise caution in their communication. The general rule of reread it carefully always works. The extent to which they take that to heart and the extent to which they also sort of mentally flip the switch and do, okay, here's the parent type lecture. It's just coming from a professor. You never know. You know, some will take it to heart and some won't and will be burned a little bit by that in the corporate world. Your best to just tell them. I don't know that there's much in our course curriculum where you formally put that out as like a learning bullet point in the syllabus, right? It's more of a, as it occurs to you and as you're talking and teaching your students, this is something that often comes up in the context of information technology, social media, et cetera.
Yeah, and I think here at Career Services, they try to address that as well.
Well, Career Services is an awesome resource. I mean, you wish more students took advantage of it. It's not just a place that sort of serves as an aggregator for recruiters who want to come and do interviews on campus. I mean, they've really got a whole suite, if you will, as you undoubtedly know, of ways to professionalize yourself, your resume, your professional etiquette, decorum, etc. Yeah, absolutely. Folks there would be good resources for that.
Okay, so what final key piece of advice would you give to students in FSB in regards to planning their careers?
Probably I would say a couple of things. Number one, be aware that there are two tracks going on in your life in college. There's completing the coursework to get your degree. There's the student track, and you know how to do this because you were high performers in high school. You figure it out. Then there's the professionalization track. You talk about mapping out your careers. The parallel, how does my resume have to look, and how do I put it together? you know, what is the etiquette for going to career fair or simply going to an information night with light hors d'oeuvres put on by a company in the commons of the business school or whatever you will? And there's advice you can get on this, but that's how they have to think of it. They have to think about constantly be dual tracking their professionalization, if you will, as young business professionals in addition to just completing the coursework. And that almost has to start from freshman year. They've already got to be thinking about how to do this, thinking about utilizing the career resources, et cetera, going to the career fairs. So, you know, just be aware that you're always doing two things at once. Second, absolutely leverage the resources here to the hilt. Again, often people don't even know they're there or don't leverage them. The earlier point about the career services office not just being a place where recruiters show up to borrow an office to do an interview. Really got a lot of resources to help them in the regard in which I just spoke. And I would say timing. You've got to be on this almost from the beginning. The seniors come in and I talk to them and I say the first career fair is a month away. A lot of the first round interviews on campus will be the very next day. Are you right now prepared in a month to be doing the interview that might set you on your professional career path immediately after college? Are you ready for that? Of course, often they are not. They've just shown back up and they're thinking their whole senior year is ahead of them. This is what they've been working towards their whole life. They want to kind of enjoy the big man or big woman on campus of being experience of being a senior in college. And it's like right away, they've got to be on it. And even in the years before that, to gain professional internships and so forth. So time is of the essence. And go talk to your professors. Maybe the last thing is, see which ones have a passion for this and are willing to help connect you and willing to help give you professional advice. The mileage is going to vary. Some will be very much into it, will love the visit, will love to help you. Some will just be more involved in their academic research and their teaching and perhaps just not have as much of an involvement or as many connections to the outside world. But you won't know that and they won't always broadcast it. So, you know, knock on our doors, come in. Most of us don't bite. Most of us are fine to have you drop by for a while.
Along those same lines, could you share any advice you have for faculty at Miami or even sister institutions on the career component?
I think that just about every division of every major university or college should have something like our careers committee, a faculty-led effort to connect students to their potential future careers and employers, which means that there are going to have to be faculty willing to take on the burden of understanding, you know, what sort of jobs will my students get after college if the intent is that they go immediately into the employment, you know, area or the workforce right after graduating and they're not going right on to graduate school. So faculty need to step up. There need to be career champions identified who are willing to serve in this kind of role that I do. And I believe that's across divisions. In business schools, maybe because we're business schools, that mindset's a little more ingrained. But I think that arts and sciences and engineering and the creative arts, et cetera, and I think all the other divisions could use something like this and could use the identification of faculty champions to help further the cause. And it may simply be a matter of a professor in an area, maybe a history professor. I'm not trying to stereotype a history professor, but perhaps in the past, some of them didn't necessarily think this way. They thought a lot of their students were going to law school or on to graduate school, and maybe not a lot of thought was given to the over half that will still be looking for a job. So how does that faculty member start educating themselves on what sort of companies would want to hire their students and how to help make that happen, how to get to know these company recruiters? That's what I think, honestly, all major divisions of all major universities are going to have to think about doing. And those people need to work closely with the Career Services Office. Every major university has a career services office for the most part. It's not that they don't have it. It's just that I think the mindset among faculty can no longer be, well, then that whole job thing for my students, that's taken care of. That's someone else's job. I just suspect we're not going to have the luxury of thinking that way anymore, regardless almost of what academic discipline we're in.
Yeah, I definitely see the advantages of career services from working there, but I can also see where it would be beneficial and almost essential for faculty to become involved. Do you have a general roadmap to advise faculty if they're interested in becoming more involved in their students' careers?
Sure, yeah, it's a great question. How do you get them to start doing this? You know, it's going to have to be a combination here. There's got to be top-down leadership. At the dean's level of these divisions, there's going to have to be a push to identify and ask, you know, we feel we need to do this. Who is willing or interested in serving as a career champion for your students? And if we could make the resources available through the Career Services Office or through, you know, business faculty willing to come over and talk a little bit about it, whatever you will, would you be willing and interested in serving as this kind of career champion? So there's got to be a top-down push, I think, to get it rolling. Academia is not the best place in the world for top-down pushes because there's a lot of autonomy and independence, and tenure means that faculty can largely do the sort of things they're interested in doing and can often avoid things they don't feel like doing. That's just the reality of the tenure system in the modern university. So while you need the top-down push, you're also going to have that bottoms-up grassroots willingness for those champions to not only take it on, but then convince and bring their other faculty members along with them. The first steps are going to have to be find some people to agree to serve as careers champions and start working with the people at the university who already know how to do this, whether that's career services personnel, whether that's faculty in the business school, if we're talking about other units that maybe might not be as familiar, which faculty over there already do this kind of stuff, or in engineering. Certain in engineering, you also have faculty who take this kind of very proactive role in their students' career prospects and in engaging with the various recruiters that hire the engineering students. You know, engage those faculty, find out what they do, find out why they do it, find out how they do it, and start setting up events and committees and so forth to push it within your own division. And that was a pretty, you know, mushy answer back for you, I think, but that's kind of how that's got to bubble up. I wish there was a direct, a bullet-pointed formula where you could say, do these 7 steps and you're set. You've now got a locked in, here's how we're going to help our students get jobs.
Email show requests to careerservices@muohio.edu, care of Craig Michael Patrick. Seeing this reoccurring theme of a perceived duality between the real world and college, and incorporating the real world is put. That's really good to know. I think that sometimes we as students feel that professors are too busy to talk, or some are much more insistent upon setting. Gosh, I like totally screwed that up. I was like not reading it and just making stuff up.